for crimes they didn't commit.
And
when I look at what happened to us, I can't help but think, you know, Corey Wise says it all the time. He says it really the best. He says, had Matias Reyes not come forward, I would have been living a 15 to life jail sentence. He would have still been in prison. They would have never let him go. That's how much they wanted us. They wanted this thing to be that. Yes.
Finally, we just have 30 seconds. You're in the car now driving. I can't even believe we're talking to you as you sit in the passenger seat. But you're a New York City Council member. You were elected to the New York City Council. And Donald Trump has become a felon, was convicted of well over a dozen felonies. Your thoughts?
You know, here's a person who, if he was black, he would not be able to run for public office. If he looked like me, he wouldn't even be able to vote. But here he is in the highest office of the land telling people that he is going to allow for immunity for the things that he has done. Really, this is the erasure of what we see as the American justice system. Those things that actually work, we need those things. We need those things to be and to stay a part of the system. We do not need people to run over the justice system and create new ideas and imaginations of what is unfortunate and what is criminal.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. Again, President Trump convicted of 34 felonies. That does it for our show. Yusuf Salam, now a New York City Council member. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and the International Travel Group. KBOO Community Radio and ITG are organizing a journey to Cuba December 14th to the 21st. It is a guided exchange of music, history, and landscapes. ITG supports KBOO's mission of fostering community through diverse voices. More information at kboo.fm/Cuba.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Support for the KBOO Evening News comes from Grendel's Coffee House. Located on East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, Grendel's serves coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com. Now, your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this special membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, OHSU doctors write letters to Governor Kotek to oppose their board chair and president.
Beaverton high schoolers will start their school days an hour later this year.
And in international news, Australian workers now have the right to disconnect after hours.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 26th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. Oregon Health and Science University doctors have started a letter-writing campaign to Governor Tina Kotek, asking her to oppose extending the tenure of the board chair and president of OHSU. They say that board chair Wayne Monfries strong-armed the board to re-up Dr. Danny Jacobs' contract with a $700,000 benefit bump during a budget crunch. 400 workers ended up losing their jobs, and many employees blame Monfries and Jacobs. Governor Kotek has the authority to appoint board members at OHSU with the approval of the Oregon Senate. Then the board appoints a chair and selects the university president. Board Chair Monfrey's term is up at the end of September, but he may remain on the board until Kotek chooses to replace him. The layoffs at OHSU and the benefit bump for the president come as the hospital system is taking over Legacy Health. It's an expensive purchase for the hospital, and it would make OHSU the largest employer in the Portland metro area. Federal regulators and the Oregon Health Authority may have something to say about it, though. Sentiment may have turned against Chair Monfrey's in April of last year when he persuaded the board to give him the ability to negotiate President Jacobs' contract solo. He extended the president's tenure even though 26 out of 27 department chairs at the School of Medicine opposed that move. Kotek has yet to respond to the letters written by OHSU doctors.
High school students in Beaverton will get some extra shut-eye this school year. Their school start time has been pushed back an hour. High schoolers used to start at 7:45 in the morning. Now they'll start at 8:45. Administrators have been working on the change for some time. Studies show that high schoolers perform better in school later in the morning. The American Academy of Pediatrics found that high school start times that are earlier than 8:30 a.m. contribute to teens not getting enough sleep. Not getting enough sleep can impact kids' health, their academic success, and even their safety. Eliza Shore is the principal of Sunset High School. She told KGW, quote, "Getting a little more sleep, starting school a little bit later, means they're ready to learn when they get here. I would imagine we'll see kids talking to each other more, asking better questions, just be ready for school. So we should see grades improve," end quote. The Beaverton School District isn't the first one in the Portland metro area to make this move for high schoolers. The Evergreen Public School District in Southwest Washington made a similar change a few years ago. Vancouver Public Schools did it last year. The change means elementary school students will start 15 minutes earlier in Beaverton to keep the buses on schedule. But administrators say a slightly earlier start won't likely impact elementary age kids learning much.
The deadline is approaching for families to apply for food benefits in Washington State. The national program known as SunBucks is the U.S. Department of Agriculture's summer EBT program, which was created during the pandemic and made permanent this year. Most families were automatically eligible for the program, which provides a one-time payment of $120 per child in a household. But families that didn't receive the benefit and believe they're eligible can apply through Saturday. Nora West with the Washington State Department of Social and Health Services says many students get meals through school.
Having kids be out of school during the summer months makes it a little harder to get access to that nutritious food. And the price of groceries are not going down, so we're pleased to be able to offer even a small amount of assistance to folks.
Kids were automatically enrolled in the program if they're at a school in the National School Lunch Program and qualified with a meal application or family income survey. They were also automatically enrolled if they're between age 8 and 18 and in a house that qualifies for benefits like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program or Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. Families that meet the National School Lunch Program's income eligibility guidelines for free or reduced price meals can apply for SunBucks. In Washington State, more than 580,000 kids have received benefits this summer, totaling nearly $69 million. West says the USDA has other summer meal programs as well.
The federal government also offers two other programs called Sun Meals and Sun Meals to Go through school districts. And those are on-site meal programs, or in some rural areas, people may have the option to go to a site and pick up food and take it with them.
37 states have chosen to participate in the SunBucks program, including Oregon.
The lawsuit against the merger of grocery giants Kroger and Albertsons kicked off in Portland today. The two chains first proposed their merger in October of 2022, and if they merge, it would be the largest supermarket merger in U.S. history. The Federal Trade Commission sued to block the deal, saying it would eliminate competition and raise grocery prices. They're joined by eight states, including Oregon and the District of Columbia. The hearing will be for the next 3 weeks at a federal district court in Portland. Albertsons told a federal judge that if they can't merge with Kroger, they may have to lay off workers, close stores, and even leave some grocery markets. In some areas of the country, the merger wouldn't matter much, like in towns that have many different grocery chains, or only an Albertsons or a Kroger. But for most of Oregon and Washington, Albertsons, which owns Safeway, and Kroger, which owns Fred Meyer and QFC, this would be a significant development. The worry is if they merge, shoppers won't be able to compare prices between them and find a better deal. Unionized grocery workers have also opposed the merger. The three-week trial will include around 40 witnesses, including the CEOs of Kroger and Albertsons. If the judge approves a preliminary injunction to pause the merger, then the FTC would have internal hearings on the matter starting in October. The case represents the latest attempt by the Biden-elected FTC chair, Lina Khan, to use antitrust law to break up large mergers. And the case could be a feather in the cap of Democrats heading into the November election. A YouGov poll released in July found that inflation tops the list of priorities for U.S. voters, with 64% of respondents calling it a major problem.
Cooler temperatures last week across the state has meant progress in battling the 18 wildfires active in Oregon. This wildfire season has already broken the record set in 2020 for acreage burned in the state. According to the Oregon Department of Forestry, over 1.5 million acres have burned this year. That tops 2020's record of 1.4 million acres. And unfortunately, fires continue to burn. Hole in the Ground Fire has burned over 56,000 acres in Malheur County since it started on July 24th. It is currently 70% contained. Crazy Creek Fire started on July 22nd and has since burned nearly 87,000 acres in Crook and Wheeler counties. It is now 93% contained. Oregon's largest wildfires have largely been contained. The Durkee Fire, which burned nearly 300,000 acres across Baker County, stands at 99% containment. The Battle Mountain Complex Fire west of Ukiah in Umatilla County is 95% contained. It has burned over 183,000 acres. All fires mentioned here were lightning caused. The ODF has 5,827 personnel assigned to the 13 large fires actively raging across the state. Thousands have been impacted by wildfires this season. Currently, 150 Oregonians face level 3 go now evacuation orders.
Pro-Palestinian activists say Kamala Harris risks losing battleground states by not calling for an Israeli arms embargo. J.D. Vance says Trump would veto a national abortion ban. And the GOP presses ahead with false claims of non-citizen voting. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
How can we have a ceasefire realized if we continue to provide the fire?
Layla Alabed with the uncommitted vote says Vice President Kamala Harris could lose Democratic votes in key states like Michigan by endorsing continued support for Israel's war in Gaza. While Harris has repeatedly called for a ceasefire, she says she won't support an arms embargo. Pro-Palestinian activists met with Harris prior to last week's convention but were denied a speaking slot. Congresswoman Summer Lee of Pennsylvania tells CBS that while Democrats remain focused on defeating former President Donald Trump, the war's critics can't be ignored.
We can do that, and we can also give space, create space for people, voices that are marginalized. We missed an opportunity to do that here.
Meanwhile, the Biden administration has again sent officials to push for a hostages for ceasefire deal between Israel and Hamas. The White House says it's urgent to prevent escalation. Israel and the Iranian-backed militia Hezbollah traded intense fire over the Lebanese border this weekend, but now seem to be backing away from confrontation. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance says Trump would veto a national abortion ban if reelected. The campaign's public position is that the matter should be up to the states.
If California wants to have a different abortion policy from Ohio, then Ohio has to respect California and California has to respect Ohio.
Trump has repeatedly touted his role in overturning Roe v. Wade, but has more recently said his administration will be great for women and their reproductive rights. Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren says she's not buying it. She points to a letter Vance sent the Justice Department last year calling for enforcement of the 19th century Comstock Act, which would ban the mailing of abortion-related drugs.
I don't mean with, exceptions for rape or incest or a 16-week ban. I mean ban it for every woman anytime she needs it.
Meanwhile, a New York judge says state election officials are not required to tell voters an anti-discrimination ballot measure would protect abortion rights. The decision follows a lawsuit over the language voters will see this November, explaining the proposed Equal Rights Amendment to the state's constitution. The National Republican Party is suing the North Carolina Board of Elections, claiming it is failing to enforce a new state law requiring non-citizens be removed from voter rolls. But Emily Webb of Common Cause North Carolina says Republicans are looking for widespread voter fraud where there is none.
What this is driving is an extremist narrative that there are non-citizens voting in some numbers that could affect this election. And ultimately, that is just false.
The lawsuit is one of more than 20 filed nationwide as GOP-related groups work to gain access to states' voter registration records. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $30,000 by September 21st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jamie Dunphy from Music Portland, a nonprofit that supports underground music and artists, about their fight against a Live Nation concert venue coming to Portland. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, LTAR, Let's Talk About Race. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 55 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny with a high of 73. Today in history, in 1920, the 19th Amendment to the United States Constitution is certified, granting women the right to vote. The 19th Amendment didn't fully franchise Black, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American women, though. That would come during the Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s and 60s. The quote of the day is from Scottish novelist John Buchan, who said, quote, "The true definition of a snob is one who craves for what separates men rather than for what unites them."
California Governor Gavin Newsom is urging the Department of the Interior to block two casino projects in the state. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. California Governor Gavin Newsom's office is urging the Department of the Interior to block two tribal casino projects it argues are focused less on restoring Aboriginal lands and more with expanding gaming into economically desirable markets. Jacob Resnick reports.
Two Northern California Pomo tribes have proposed separate gaming projects, a 68-acre casino near the Sonoma County Airport and a 125-acre casino near the city of Vallejo. But fellow Pomo tribes running established casinos in the San Francisco Bay Area have urged the projects be denied by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom's office this month joined that chorus of naysayers, arguing that both tribes lack sufficient historical connection to the project sites.
The governor's opposition reflects a fundamental misunderstanding of federal law.
That's Koi Nation spokesperson Matthew Singer, which has proposed the Shiloh Resort and Casino in northern Sonoma County. He said the Federal Indian Gaming Regulatory Act's restored lands exemption
was designed precisely to correct historic wrongs that rendered landless tribes just like the Koi and deprived them of opportunities to develop and achieve economic self-sufficiency.
Descendants of both Pomo tribes come from neighboring Lake County, but became landless in the last century under forced assimilation policies that targeted tribal reservations and rescinded federal recognition. Many California tribes had their status restored in the 1990s. Andy Mejias, tribal chairperson of the Lytton Rancheria, has applauded California governor's push to halt the two casinos proposed by tribes whose descendants come from a neighboring county.
Allowing tribes to take land into trust without a historical connection sets a dangerous precedent in Indian country. It opens the floodgate and it will be impossible to close.
But the history here is complex. After the Lytton Rancheria had its status restored, it worked with Congress in the 1990s to allow the Sonoma County-based tribe to build a casino in the industrial city of San Pablo, some 60 miles southeast of its traditional lands. Mejia says a key difference is that his casino was welcomed at the time by the city officials, whereas these projects have been met with broad opposition by local authorities. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is accepting public comment on the proposal by the tribes to put the lands into trust that could allow new casinos north of San Francisco. The comment period closes August 26. For National Native News, I'm Jacob Resnick in Sonoma County.
Some federal incentives to bring internet access to rural communities neglected to require tribal participation, according to a new report. Kathleen Shannon has more.
The Federal Communications Commission's 2020 Rural Digital Opportunity Fund awarded over $9 billion to cable and satellite operators, phone companies, and others to deploy broadband in areas lacking it. A new report from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance shows that program included no requirement for tribal consent or engagement before companies placed bids. Author Jessica Auer says that left some tribes, especially those with their own broadband projects, in what she calls a bureaucratic boondoggle that led to tension and confusion.
They're required to spend resources and staff time trying to contest these awards, confronted by outside providers who feel that they have a mandate and a right to build on sovereign tribal lands.
Auer says not including tribal nations at the table is, in many cases, considered a violation of tribal sovereignty. According to a 2022 study, households in tribal areas are about 24% less likely to have access to broadband internet than others. In some cases, tribes are able to build these projects themselves. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe was awarded a $40 million grant to connect over 1,500 tribal households with fiber internet access and an LTE network.
That was Kathleen Shannon reporting, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Women's Equality Day commemorates the passage of the 19th Amendment, giving women the right to vote. More than a century later, women have made progress, but more work needs to be done. Women have made major gains in elected positions across the country. In Oregon, they make up more than 40% of the seats in the legislature, the 13th highest percentage in the country. Libra Ford, co-chair of the Oregon Commission for Women, says the 19th Amendment was a big accomplishment, but it didn't end the push for women's progress.
As they saw a need during their time for us to have availability and access to things that they didn't have, I think most of the women, especially the women of the commission, we see a need to do the same thing for things that maybe women have not had access to yet, and kind of taking the torch that's been passed to us.
Ford highlights some of the issues where Oregon lawmakers could go further, such as being more vigorous protecting women from domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking. On August 26, 1920, the U.S. Secretary of State completed the ratification process for the 19th Amendment, ensuring women the right to vote. Ford says Oregon lawmakers and groups across the state are doing a good job advocating for women's rights, but she adds that it's going to take a greater effort to protect these rights for the next generation.
We're going to need more than just women to do that work. We need everyone to come together kind of like they did 104 years ago and say, hey, this is important to all of us. And if we all can win in this, then I think we all can also succeed.
The Oregon Commission for Women is among the state's four advocacy commissions. It pushes for policies that support and protect women.
Australian workers have a new benefit after the day is done, the right to disconnect. The new law allows employees to ignore after-hours communications if they want to, without fear of being punished by their boss. It doesn't ban managers from contacting workers after hours, but workers can't be punished for refusing to reply after hours, unless that refusal is unreasonable. A survey of Australians indicated they work on average 280 hours of unpaid overtime each year. The law first passed in February, but it took effect today. Australia isn't the first to move to protect workers' free time. Over 20 countries in Europe and Latin America have similar rules. Australian Senator Murray Watts said, quote, "It's really about trying to bring back some work-life balance, make sure that people aren't racking up hours of unpaid overtime for checking emails and responding to things at a time when they're not being paid," end quote.
On Sunday, TriMet announced big changes to its bus and light rail service. According to TriMet, they mark a historic day for the Portland Transit Agency. Changes include shifting late-night light rail services to buses, as well as the addition of two bus lines. Line 40 will provide bus connections between Southeast Portland and Swan Island, and Line 153 will provide weekend service between Lake Oswego and West Lynn. On top of adding these bus lines, TriMet will also eliminate three. They say they made the decision based on low ridership and the fact they overlap with other lines. Those on the chopping block are lines 85 and 99, which overlap with the new line 40, and line 154 between Willamette and Clackamas Heights, which overlaps line 153 as well as the existing lines 34 and 76. Existing bus lines will be extended and offer more frequent service. In total, 550 bus stops will be updated with new signage. The Max Red Line will also see the addition of 10 stops taking it into Hillsboro. Trips on the light rail will, however, now end around midnight, with service shifting to bus transit. TriMet says the decision means more time to clean and service the light rail trains. According to TriMet spokesperson Mark Miller, the light rail experienced the second shortest window in the country for overnight maintenance. TriMet foresees additional maintenance will reduce service disruptions, save the agency money, and alleviate security concerns. That last point is a key priority for TriMet. TriMet surveys show the percentage of passengers who feel, quote, very or moderately safe on MAX trains or buses has dropped from 2018 to 2023. That's despite a decline in reported assaults on TriMet vehicles and platforms.
In further Northwest transportation news, a project in the Puget Sound region that helps people plan for their transportation needs has received a federal grant to continue its work. As Eric Tagadoff reports, the online tool is especially useful for people with mobility issues.
A grant from the federal government is helping improve transportation planning options in the Puget Sound region. The nonprofit HopeLink has received a $519,000 Innovative Coordinated Access and Mobility Project grant, a program created through the bipartisan infrastructure law passed in 2021. Director of Mobility Management for HopeLink, Stacy Sahu, says the funds will support the second phase in the development of its online tool, the Find a Ride Trip Planner. She says different transportation resources each have their own avenues for signing up.
What this funds are, and we're so excited for, is to make it as seamless as we possibly can with all the systems diverging. How do we bring it all into one tool so that somebody just has to apply, just has to sign up one time?
Sahu says the ultimate goal of the Find a Trip Planner tool is to create a seamless process for the booking and payment of transportation. Many people have to work across different apps and tools to do that currently. The planner provides transportation options across King, Pierce, and Snohomish counties. Sahu says finding transportation can be hard, especially for people who may have mobility issues. However, this tool could help them identify resources for transportation.
An individual who uses a mobility device, a person who identifies as low vision or blind, they're likely eligible for a lot more services than they realize. And that's what we're trying to help connect them with.
Sahu says the tool has also helped to identify gaps in transportation services. For example, Snoqualmie Valley recently launched service on the weekend.
Our first priority is the end user, the person who will be using the tool, but we've already seen benefits on actually increasing services because we're able to more easily see what's lacking.
The Find a Ride Trip Planner was among 17 projects selected to receive an Innovative Coordinated Access and Mobility Project grant. The Federal Transit Administration distributed a combined $7.8 million to these projects. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A tree planting project aims to identify climate-resilient trees. These volunteers are helping scientists study which trees will thrive as the climate warms. Dr. Anthony Leiswitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leiswitz, and this is Climate Connections. In 2020, about 200 volunteers helped plant trees at Crosby Farm Regional Park near the Mississippi River in St. Paul, Minnesota. They helped launch a 20-year project that seeks to identify which tree species will grow well in the region as the climate warms and precipitation becomes more extreme. Emma Vondi of the nonprofit Mississippi Park Connection coordinates volunteers for the project. She says they planted more than 1,000 trees across 24 research plots. Some plots contain species already common in the area.
So mainly cottonwood, silver maple, with a few other native species.
Others contain species more common farther south, such as sycamore and sweet gum. Volunteers also help maintain the plots and provide eyes on the ground.
They are associated with one plot, and so they know that plot very well.
They monitor the tree's health, note when the trees flower and drop leaves, and measure soil moisture and temperature. These observations will help researchers determine which tree species will grow best in the region as the climate warms, so landowners and forest managers can plant trees that are likely to thrive long-term. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Monday, August 26th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself and Zachary Jones-Nure. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Eric Tagadoff, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a great time to join. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO Portland. My name is Zachary Jones-Nure, and I had the chance to speak to Jamie Dunphy. Born and raised in Portland, Oregon, the chair of the Music Policy Council under Music Portland's board of directors spoke to me about his campaign against Live Nation, the world-leading live entertainment company, and its threat to the DIY music scene right here. If it is under a bridge, in my opinion, then you're not really seeing the real show.
Troll core,
completely. So along the conversations of bridges and one of the many iconic symbols of Portland, whether it's one of the 12 that we happen to have, Portland has a reputation of a very well-developed, rich DIY scene. You know, whether it's from its roots in punk, grunge, indie rock, and pretty much every genre that you can think of, we have a real identity in the scene itself. And I wonder,